Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Welcome to Heritage Radio Network On Tour. I'm Harry Rosenblum from Feast Your Ears. Today we're broadcasting live from Charleston Wine and Food. We want to thank the Julia Child Foundation for making our coverage possible and to Charleston Wine and Food Festival for having us here for the fifth year in a row. I'm very pleased to get a chance to sit down and offer a little break to my friend Quentin Middleton, who is a knife maker. Middleton Made Knives is his company. If you are a reader of the Wall Street Journal, you would have seen a very nice piece this morning that spoke quite a bit about him and his craft.
That's correct.
Thanks so much, Quentin, for coming to sit down with me. I know you've been on your feet the past couple of days. You're slinging your product over here in the Artisan Village.
Yes, thank you so much. Oh, Lord, man, I need to sit down, man. thank you.
So let's go right back to the beginning. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, you made your first blade when you were about 7 years old.
Yes, it was more of an ice pick than a knife.
I mean, everybody starts somewhere.
Yeah. So what it was, is I took a piece of shower rod and a sharp piece of steel, and I kind of hammered it together. And my dad saw that I made a shank, and he said, like, give me this, boy, you're going to poke your eye out. And he threw it on top of the china cabinet. And actually, I'm sorry, but that same shank that I made when I was seven, my dad passed away in 2007, and maybe 3 years ago, I went on top of my grandparents' china cabinet, and it was still there. And I
wow.
Like, wow. And truthfully, that was the last thing I know that my dad touched. And like, so I'm cherishing that.
Oh, wow. That's super cool. That's thank amazing. So from there, mm-hmm. obviously now the knives you make are not shanks made out of shower rods.
Yes. It's not shanks anymore. No.
Tell me a little bit about your process. So, I mean, you are part of a growing number of artisan knife makers who mm-hmm. make knives pretty much completely by hand.
Yes.
Not only here in the United States, all over the world, but really I think there's been a huge resurgence here in the United States of people working with their hands, not just making knives, but you're a knife maker.
Yeah, definitely. I've been making knives for 17 years and my company's been open 10. So I'm not the new kid on the block anymore. I'm the old guy.
Right.
Like, and I get just about a email every other week saying, can you teach me? Can you teach me? I get a lot of newbies coming up now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that social media has really affected that. And obviously there's shows like Forge and Fire and, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. But, you know, it's exciting, right? I mean, there is something visceral mm-hmm. About watching a knife get made or watching a piece of hot steel. Mm-hmm. I visited the Smithy cast iron cookware factory on Thursday, and they're making actually a forged steel pan.
Yes.
And I got to watch that process, and it's very similar. I mean, mm-hmm. they're taking a piece of steel and they're putting it in a forge. They're getting it super hot.
Mm-hmm.
They're putting it into a trip hammer, you know, and they're really drawing out that blade. The other thing about it is it takes a long time, right?
Yes,
I mean, you're not putting out 1,000 knives a week.
No, I'm not. I wish I could. But, like, but it's like the knives that I make, every last one of them have a soul or is a part of me in each and every knife I make. And it's really personal. So everybody that has a knife for me, I'm in a lot of kitchens.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Are there some knives that are like more special to you than others? Like, are there chefs that have knives that you made that either was a design choice or something like that, that you know they have them and it like...
Actually, there is one knife that I know for sure that's really special to me. It was a throwaway. And I messed up on it. I threw it away maybe 4 years ago. And I picked it up and I saw it in my scrap bin. I said, wow, I can make something else out of that. And I made it and I sold it for maybe $1,500. And that'd be the one that's really special to me because it was a throwaway. And it's kind of like in life, people that you think that are castaways, they can maybe later on they could be something that you would never think of.
That's really awesome. So it was just something that you realized eventually.
Yes.
It took a while to kind of get it, make it into something
else. Yeah, because
really
truthfully, great. At the time, my skill level wasn't to where it is now, because we go through a journey. So if I took you, think about your ABCs. So if you were at F right now, if I take you from F and put you at X, can you sustain X with an F knowledge? You can't. So you have to go through the process.
Right.
So I had to go through the process of getting to where I am now.
And how long does it take you to make a knife? I mean, I know obviously it's different depending on what kind of steel you're working with,
yes,
what size it is, what kind of handle material, but take me through the process of like making a chef's knife.
Like, so I answer that in two ways. So A is 17 years, and B is I can make a knife. If I'm making one exact knife, is 6 hours hands-on time and 2 hours hands-off. And the 2 hours is the heat treating and tempering of the knife. So basically, if I pick the steel that I want to use, and I already have the design in my head what I want to make. So I would forge out the steel to the width of it. And after I get the width that I need, I would grind the perimeter of the knife to get to the shape. Then after I do that, I heat treat it to get it hard, temper it to draw the hardness out. And then I would grind the bevels. So that would go through different grits from 50 grit to 600 grit. Then I would tape it up, put the handles on, and shape the handles to what I think will be comfortable for the end user.
Got it. And then, so you're spending your time making all the knives.
Yes.
Do you have anybody working with you in the
yes.
shop?
Yes. I have two apprentices that I'm teaching and helping me produce my, not to say production line, but production line.
Yeah.
Because everybody can't afford a $400 or $1,200 knife. So I'm producing something that's called the Echo line. So it echoes what I currently make. So it's a knife that in the price range of $200. And every line cook can't afford a $500 knife. So right. I want to put in that price range where it's close to Shun and Mustaf and Zwilling and everything like that. And plus, it's handmade by me and my apprentices.
Right.
Like, absolutely. So you're still getting something handmade, but it's just not by me.
And then you're sharing that knowledge and you're employing people. It's not right. just you working by yourself anymore.
Yeah, it's like I learned that if I get sick, production stops.
Right.
And if I'm just making the knife, my legacy won't go past me. So if I wanted to create something and breathe life back into the American dream, I have to bring people aboard. And I have to, like, inspire somebody to say, like, okay, we can do this together. So that's what I really believe in, and that's what I'm pushing.
So at an event like this, like at Charleston Wine and Food here, you've got your table set up. People can view 60, 70 of your knives. Mm-hmm. How many knives will you sell in 3 days at this festival?
Ooh. So it took me 2 months to get about 70 knives made, and 2/3 of it's gone.
Wow. And yeah. we're on day two. So you'll basically have sold everything by the end of the day tomorrow.
Pretty much, yes.
Wow. And then you had a great coverage this morning. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal people should check out about, you know, the headline, of course, the way headlines are, says $24,000 knife. And they're talking about Bob Kramer, who's like the granddaddy of modern American bladesmithing. Mm-hmm. And that one of his knives, which he auctioned off, and he does this from time to time, he auctions them off, usually for charity, I think.
Yeah, charity, yes.
Went for $24,000. Mm-hmm. But you're mentioned heavily in the article as another, you know, well-respected knife maker. Do you also have knives up for sale on your website?
Yes, I do have knives on my website, but they are killing me right now. But since I'm on the Wall Street Journal, I have to get my rich voice. Well, yes, on the Wall Street Journal. They're tearing up my inventory right now. Well, yeah, like they're killing me right now. I'm selling knives here and on my website, and I'm telling my apprentices that are with me here, I say, I hope I got enough inventory. So I'm checking
right.
while I'm selling knives here, and it's a whirlwind right now.
And they mentioned in the article, they talk about a couple of other knife makers, and I've talked to other knife makers that have this exact same problem. I mean, Bob Kramer had this problem when he first got an article written about him, that he got enough orders for like three years and he stopped taking orders, right? Are you worried that might happen? Is it a good problem to have? Is it?
It's like the thing about that, it's pros and cons. So like it can be a great thing because I have the money now, but that money may not last for 3 years. So for me, I try to make something where I know I can finish it within the next few months.
Right.
Then it's not hindering me too much, because an artist can get trapped in perfection. Like, so when they're trying to perfect everything, it's like, oh, it has to be this and it has to be that. And that can suck them in for 3 years. And so I had to teach myself to get out of that, too, but still have the quality and the professionalism in it. But I have to learn, okay, I have to let it go.
So I have to ask, do you ever get bored with just, like, cranking out knives? Like, how do you keep it interesting? Is it working with new shapes, new steel, new material?
Truthfully, to be fully candid, maybe 3 years ago, I wanted to quit. Like, because it was just, I was tired, I was burned out, and I'm making the same thing over and over and over and over again. And I just got tired, and I looked at my children, and they were the one that kind of breathed life back into it, because I'm doing it for them. I'm building Middleton-made knives for them. So something that they can have, something tangible that they can say, like, okay, my dad was the grunt man for this, and now we need to take it the next level. So they were the one like, okay, daddy, get to work.
How old are your kids?
My kids, Michael and Layla. Layla's 8 and Michael is 9.
Got it. Do they have knives of their own that you've made for them?
Well.
Or have they made knives in the shop with
like,
you?
They're trying to. Like, yeah. So, but they're the thing about my son, he's into music. And we try not to, like, oh, no, don't do this or don't do that. We're really pushing them. And my daughter, she's big into art. Like, she likes to draw and paint. So we really push them to expand on their creativity. So we're not really trying to cover anything up. Like, I'm not telling you, you could be a knife maker.
So there's an exhibit coming up in New York in Harlem called African American Making the Nation's Table. It's being put on by the Museum of Food and Drink.
Yes.
It is going to have the famous Ebony Test Kitchen reinstalled there. And as I understand it, your knives, hopefully, if
we'll
you have
there.
Some inventory, will
yeah.
be available
yeah.
there. I mean, I think that's super exciting, right? I mean, at this iconic African-American kitchen that was such a big part of that magazine.
Yes.
I mean, and then to have your product displayed there, how does that feel?
Wow, it's to hear you say it like that, man. It's really cool because, like, for artisans, like, we get trapped in our own space because we really don't hear the accolades much because we're in our shop and we really don't pay attention to it much. And to hear you say it like that, like, wow, I'm just a guy from a small town. Like, you sure you want me? Like, that's how I feel sometimes, but I smile and nod. Like, yeah, thank you.
So, I mean, I have to say, and we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, you know, looking around at this Food and Wine Festival, it's awesome, right? There's
yes.
thousands of people here. Mm-hmm. Everybody's here because they're interested in food. They're interested in beverage. They're interested in what you're making. They're
yes.
looking at the other artisans who are selling things over there. I don't see a lot of African-American faces.
Yes.
It's a pretty white crowd.
Yeah. It's Charleston.
You know, how is it for you being an African-American in this industry related to food, which, you know, I mean, obviously there are accolades being paid to African-American chefs.
Yes.
But it's still very white dominated.
It very is. Like, when I started, it was very hard for me to get in at first because they don't know who I am or what I do. And it's just that, I don't know, I hate to say it like this, racism, like, but it's in certain people's hearts, and it's
right.
there, it's there. And, like, you may not think of it, but it just happens, because it's there. And it's just something that has to be weeded out over time.
Right.
Like, you can't teach your children to say, like, oh, a black person does this. And, like, it's a stereotype, like, they act like this. It shouldn't be that way. Because
yeah.
as a for me as a knife maker, there's very few black knife makers. So for me, it's like you're a black knife maker. Like, that's very rare. Why does it have to be that?
Right.
Like, even though I'm black and I'm doing what I love.
I mean, knife making is pretty rare in and of itself.
It is.
Right. I mean,
it
it's not, you know.
Yeah. But it I do get that thing like, ooh, you're a black guy like making knives. That's weird. You're a weird guy. Like. I can see they're not saying that, but I can see it
yeah,
in their eyes.
Yeah.
And for a long time, it bothered me. But I learned that if I make a great product, it speaks for itself.
Yeah.
Like, even though if someone that's don't like it for my skin tone, they love my knife.
Yeah.
Like, so you're paying for my children to go to college. So I'm just gonna smile and nod. All right. Well, you may not like me, but
so what shape? What knife shape do you use at home in the kitchen?
I use all kinds. So my kitchen is the test kitchen.
Right.
So I test a lot of different shapes and designs. So My wife hates when I will bring a new knife in. She says, oh, I love it. I love it. And then the next few days it's gone because I want to change something. Like, where's my knife? Where's my knife? I'm sorry I grind it up and change the design. Like, so she hates that, but I have like a wall full of knives in my kitchen.
Yeah, I imagine so. And then do you also keep and collect knives by other makers?
Actually, I don't.
Huh.
Like, I admire other people's knives,
sure.
But I don't collect them. I look at the, look at them on Instagram, and sometimes I'm holding their knives, but I don't invest in it too much because I'm tunnel vision. Because sometimes I can get distracted by other things.
Sure.
Because I can get influenced by someone else's design, and they can say like, "Oh, you copied me." Or you took this from me, so I don't want that. I'm tunnel vision, and if I get inspired by something like trees or a painting or something like that, then I can say I got inspired from this, or I got inspired from that, and then I can make something. So that's something for me, I guess.
So you also have a pretty, I would imagine, serious spiritual side.
Yes, I do. Yes.
You're also a preacher?
I am a preacher. Yes, I am.
Tell me about that.
I'm a weird preacher. I'm a preacher that make knives.
do you have a congregation that you lead?
So what is that? Like, my bishop is the pastor of the church, and so I'm under him.
Got it.
So he wants me back Sunday, but I'm going to be here.
Right. How does the spiritualism and the knives, like, is there a connection there to when you're working, to when you're working with the steel?
Actually, my knife making is my ministry, a part of my ministry, because you have people that may not believe in Christ, may not believe in Jesus Christ, and that's not a problem. So, for example, if I sell a knife to a chef and they're preparing food for thousands of people, I'm believing that I'm blessing that knife, I'm praying over it while I'm working, and someone that may not be a believer have cancer or they may be sick. So that knife that the chef cut the food with, I'm believing that that blessing transferred to the food,
sure,
to where they could be healed, even if they don't believe in Christ. But I do. I'm sharing Christ's love,
sure,
like to everybody. So that's part of my ministry. It's just love.
That's awesome. And I mean, it's like the loaves and fishes story, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's like the
exactly.
same thing. You are contributing to the ability of that feeding of people.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love it.
Amen to that.
So, you know, I would feel remiss if I also didn't point out that we are sitting here at this Wine and Food Festival in Charleston under a statue of John Calhoun. And for those who are listening, you know, as someone who, you know, studied a lot of history,
mm-hmm.
And paid close attention, I mean, in the last couple of years, there's been a lot of press about places pulling down statues of Confederate leaders, mm-hmm. of secessionists, of slave owners, that kind of thing.
Yes.
I mean, he is like the architect of the secession.
Exactly.
And was a slave owner and mm-hmm. really, you know, was very much a part of that. You know, I want to bring it up. I'm, you know, what do you think about that? About the fact that we're doing it here? I mean, I personally feel that we shouldn't deny the history, but I also feel like people should know the history.
Yeah, you shouldn't deny the history. You should learn from your history. But what I think is funny, you got the Confederate John Calhoun and you got St. Francis Mary right across the street. Like, so they're battling each other. So
right,
and I think that's funny. You should learn from history. You should never cancel out history or what it is. Like, learn from it, and what can we take from it? So even though this person may had his slaves and everything like that, but that's not taken away from what I'm doing.
Sure, absolutely.
And like it truthfully inspired me to do better because that person I cite may think I'm the lowest to a worm. But I'm showing them that I am making knives in my backyard.
Right.
I'm on the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
And like, where you think that I'm worthless, I'm succeeding.
Right. Right. So what does, you know, when I see you here next year, if I don't mm-hmm. see you before, like, what does that look like? You know, like, are there new knife shapes in the works? Are there new materials you want to be working with?
Yeah. So what's in the works now is the folding chef knife.
Folding chef knife.
Yes. It's a 6-inch Sentaku. And what it is you purchase a knife from me for $500 and you want to go outside and barbecue or grill. You don't want to take that $500 knife outside.
Sure.
And so
you don't want to drop it on the rocks next to your grill.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So this knife is basically a traveling knife, and it will fold up, pack up, and you can go camping. You can, for chefs that love to travel that don't want to take their knife rule, they'll have that and stick it in their knife. Take the knife and put it in their pocket. Like when I've been in Brooklyn, riding on the sub, and I've seen chefs with their knife rolls, and they're looking like, oh damn, I got knives in here.
Yeah.
Like so somebody that can feel safe, and I got something that can use all day long, and then put it right back in my pocket and go. So hopefully that will be out and running by mid this year.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Quentin, for sitting down to talk with me. People should check out, they can follow you on Instagram at Middleton Made Knives.
Yes.
And is that also the website?
Yes, MiddletonMadeKnives.com.
Awesome. And you should go there like right now, or if you're in Charleston, you should come over to the table because I think inventory is going to be very low.
If I'm not sold out right now.
Thanks so much for listening to Heritage Radio Network On Tour today. I'm Harry Rosenblum. Thanks again for the Julia Child Foundation for making our coverage possible. Stay tuned for more from Charleston Wine and Food.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.